Hello, I'm your host, Anthony Giorgio, and you're listening to another episode of QT, Queer Teen Podcast, showcasing and encouraging the next generation of queer youth from across the world to stand up for what's right.
Hi, my name is Pastor Jessica Nalty. I'm the pastor here at this church. How many of you thought it was like, wow, that this was at a church? Be honest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's why I do it.
We love you. Let's just say it like that. You are who you are, and we love you, and our belief is that God loves you too. So please know that this is a safe space for you. It's a space where you can question. It's a space where you can be. So we hope that you feel welcome. Please be welcome, feel welcome, know that you're welcome back anytime.
So QT, Queer Teen Podcast, it's showcasing and encouraging the next generation of queer youth from across the world to stand up for what's right. And why I started this podcast is because I was a little tired of hearing people speak on behalf of communities they know nothing about. It's disheartening and it's confusing to people, especially with social media and the way people tweet things and go on Instagram and Snapchat. It's very poisonous to any youth, but specifically the queer community, who I absolutely 100% take a stand for in all the work that I do. A little bit about what I do is that I do a lot of work with LGBTQ youth in general across the board. I'm a theater arts teacher at the Algonquin Theater Arts Theater in Manasquan. A couple of those kids. If you're from there, raise your hand. Yeah, holla. Don't be shy. You're not shy in class. Holla. So I do that, and a bunch of the kids that I've interviewed are here. If you've interviewed in the podcast, can you just stand up really quick? You don't have to say anything. You just have to stand up. So give them a round of applause because it's brave. It's really brave. And why it's brave is because this podcast is on iTunes and Spotify and Podbean, and you, literally the conversations are just designed in you living your ultimate truth, right? And so what does that mean? Well, it means you're vulnerable to what people are doing, you know, people's opinions and ideas of what something should be, but there are no rules, okay? There's absolutely no rules. We designed and made up all these things, and so we have to continue to do that, and the work is never done. So that's why I started a QT podcast, and I love kids. I've done work with children my whole entire life. I was a professional dancer, and anytime I did a show, I was involved in the kids' show. I always had some way of bringing back the youth to the things that I've been doing. And it's pretty cool because this podcast, I mean, I already made it to someone in the UK, which is really exciting. We've already had a conversation. She's going to be on the 8th episode. It's her birthday today, so happy birthday. That's how it's working. I'm going to India in 2 weeks, and I'm going to interview there as well. So when I do mean the world, I mean that everybody's going to have a conversation inside of the queer community across the freaking world. So that's how it's going to go down. So that's it. So I'm super excited to do this little panel. I have some pretty awesome people on stage with me today. I'm going to introduce them one by one. Actually, I'm going to introduce the adults, and then I'm going to force the kids to introduce themselves. So this is, I'm going to go that way. Michelle Mackenzie Creech is the Director of Family Ministry at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Monmouth County, right down the road from here. She, as a religious educator, Michelle is responsible for the development and administration of a comprehensive faith development program for children, youth, and adults, including support, education, inclusion, and creating spaces that honor every part of a person's identity, background, and their experiences. I go to that church. A lot of my kids from my, if you're from my church, can you stand up and say, hey, all my kids, see. Tonight's actually a youth group night, and so they're all here, which is awesome because they literally, everybody supports everyone to no end of that church. So it's pretty awesome. And then sitting right here is Ashley. What last name do you go by?
Chiapano, that's my Facebook name.
Chiapano.
That's my real name.
Chiapano and Ashley, how do you say it?
Etchy.
Okay. Well, she's the Safe Schools Coordinator for Garden State Equality, And as the Safe Schools Coordinator, it's her mission to create inclusive and affirm schools and community environments for LGBTQ youth by providing professional development to educators, workshops for all students, and learning opportunities to parents and community members through our five Safe Schools initiatives: Teach, Affirm, Equality Through Art, Teach and Affirm Equality Through Art, Youth Caucus Leadership and Advocacy Program, Educators for Equality, and our library and community education series. She does a lot of things, just so you guys know. But it's how I also came to getting a lot of my interviews in schools with the youth. So it's great. And then in the center here is a rock star. This is Kate. Say hi, Kate. Everybody say hi to Kate.
Hi.
Because Kate got me connected to Jess, to this church, and we brought it into the church community because it's really important. Kate also created this. Created the rest of my logo. Well, we fixed it.
Yeah,
oh. I can keep talking about you because I have the microphone. So she created it, and she got this whole thing really set up for me in the process of me going to get ready for India, which has been a huge help. She's the co-founder and program director of Make It Better for Youth. Make It Better for Youth is an umbrella organization of concerned and determined educators, community leaders, arts and cultural organizations, businesses and individuals who are pooling resources and ideas to make it better with education, outreach, and social opportunities for our LGBTQ youth. You can visit it at makeitbetterforyouth.com. .org. It goes makeitbetterforyouth.org, but you can get the information. I believe there's flyers somewhere in regards to that. So, these are some powerful women, amazing women. Can you give them a round of applause? All right, so these are my kids that have been on some of my episodes. Carl, this is Carl that's from my church, and this is his. He hasn't been on any podcast yet, so this is he'll close the 10th podcast with us. But you're going to introduce yourselves. Grab that microphone over there. And this is Drew. You can say hi.
I'm Drew. Hi.
Where do you go to high school?
I go to Henry Hudson Regional School.
And how do you identify? What's your pronoun?
He, him. And gay.
Gay. Gay.
Gay.
Go ahead.
To make sure you heard.
Great. And then, actually, no. Tell me one thing about you that no one else knows. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Can you imagine? No, I'm not going to do that. Not till the end. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Sydney. I go by they, them, and I'm bisexual.
And where do you go to school?
I also go to Henry Hudson Regional.
Rock on. All right.
Hi, I'm Carl Smith, and I identify as him, he, and I'm gay. And I go to Knollwood Middle School.
Sweet. Awesome. You can put the microphone back there. All right. So I pass along a couple of questions, and we're just going to live inside of these questions. And then at the end, if you hi Pamela, I just sang. And if you have any questions about what this is and how we keep doing, and any questions that come up in your mind, feel free to ask them towards the end. But so far, one of the questions that I ask is, what do you think we can do to continue the education of queer history and its importance to the way it has shaped America? It's a big question, right? We're gonna start over here first. I did it that way for a reason. I know how to keep these things moving. Not that you should hear these kids talk, for real. So they ain't got nothing on us. You go, whoever wants to go first.
I will start just a little bit. I think that there are a number of things that we can do. I'm an educator by my day, day-to-day job thing. I'm art and art history. I teach in high school. And, I work really closely with a lot of other teachers. And it became really apparent to me a number of years ago that for a number of reasons, we don't always teach a full history of things. And it became a big concern for me with what young teachers especially were coming out of school with and coming into, I'm seeing it in high schools, where we kind of hit it at the end, your 11th and 12th graders, and we're just like making sure, you're gonna go off to college and meet a lot of different people. You need to know a little more. And there were a lot of kind of cracks in the education system, not from a malicious standpoint, but just from a structural standpoint. And Ashley will talk a little bit more about this. I'm going to hand this over. But there have been a lot of really well-informed, really well-intentioned people who have been working to make that change in a couple of different arms. And one of them has been legislatively. And she'll talk about those mechanisms also. But one of the pieces is we need people to have materials available for teachers in schools so that teachers are prepared and are comfortable and able to talk with students about any of our histories, whether they're African-American histories or immigrant histories or LGBTQ histories. You know, there are a lot of things that have been contributed or have been experienced, and they're not recorded and discussed about. And we're working to change that with the curricular and educational piece. And it starts really young. I don't want to see it just in high school.
Right.
I want to see pre-K, K, because we're talking about
all the way.
Because we're talking about empathy, and we're talking about our ability to accept something that doesn't look like us or sound like us, or any of that kind of general response. It's like my tiny nutshell answer.
Yeah.
But it's really granular because
of course, yeah. You know, there's layers to it.
There's a lot more going on.
I mean, when I was teaching preschool, and I was teaching preschool in New York City for about 10 years, and being in New York City, it's different. Like, inside of what we were doing, we had actual, like, books and things designed, and kids could come in, and a two-year-old and three-year-old. And everyone's like, well, they're just two and three. I go, that's such an important age for them to develop a sense of self, right? And so by the time they get to 5 or 6 years old, they're trying to, like, they're like, oh, well, can I be comfortable? You're just starting to make decisions for yourself, because kids can be mean, we know that, and then there's kids that aren't mean. So you're really trying to decide what that is for you, but if it starts around 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, it really can, and you can have that in the curriculum, you can have books and things to do for them. You'd be, if you took one kid and studied psychologically by putting in everything that's inclusive in the curriculum all the way through high school till they get to their senior year, and then you had that conversation with them at their senior year, I guarantee you that kid would have no qualms about anything.
And it's not because they are any one of the identified things they were teaching, and that's the kind of the piece that's hardest to do, have everybody else sort of understand, right, is that it's not about a queer kid necessarily seeing their history alone, or a kid of color seeing their own history. I mean, it's very intersectional, all of this. But it's about the other people in the community. There's a theory called windows and mirrors, right? And it's like, I need to grow up and see people like me so I have a healthy sense of myself, but other people need to look through the window at people that are not like them in order to understand and embrace outside of
themselves.
That's
the way. I'm just gonna pass it off to a kid, and then I'll come back to you. Who wants to take this one? Hi, Drew.
So I completely agree. I think it starts really young. Our fear of not being accepted starts when we're really young. So to have people, or have the history of people that have been gay, and you're like, oh my God, I'm not the only one, that's a huge deal, especially to someone that may feel like they're alone in their community, that may have never seen a gay person before, they don't even know how to identify the feelings that they're feeling. To have a whole history of people that have felt that thing before you is immense and great. You can look at all these historical figures, Marlene Dietrich, Marsha P. Johnson, throw it back 1,000 years, Sapphos, great lesbian poet,
he
by the way.
He knows a lot of, by the way, he knows a lot of things that
I have a lot of time, and Wikipedia is my best friend. So, basically, I agree. I think when it comes to implementing LGBT education, specifically in schools, I think we learn right now a lot of whitewashed history. And it's not, some of it is done out of malicious intent, but a lot of it is just teachers being taught what to teach. A lot of them is them being handed things that they need to teach and them doing it. There's not a lot of wiggle room in terms of them teaching what they want to teach or teaching what the students want to learn. So I think in the beginning, there might need to be sort of an elective program where kids might be able to have the option to learn about LGBT history. And I think once the state really sees those numbers, the number of kids that would turn out for those classes, I think they could actually see the change in implementing it into the mainstream core of actual classes.
Well, here's something exciting. Ashley, talk
Hi.
About a little bit on that.
if you all have not heard, recently, GLSEN Central Jersey, Jersey Shore Now, with the support of Garden State Equality, we recently had the LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill passed here in our state. Yes, you can holla at that. LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill. So essentially what this legislation says, it is it is, the governor has been provided with this information. He just needs to sign it, which we are hopeful that he will. But essentially, this LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill says that starting in fifth grade, fifth through 12th grade, that LGBTQ history will be taught in a positive, accurate way. So that would be for your fifth graders in the social studies class, right? Or for your juniors, it would be a US history class. But it will be done in a way that is inclusive and affirming. It is not going to be talked about kind of historically, right? If it's mentioned, depending on what district you're in New Jersey, right? You are either going to get a positive response to LGBTQ identities or you're not, right? But now the expectation is that this is taught just like you would teach African American history or Native American history. It's going to be taught based on what's gone on in our country, right? When the gay liberation movement started, and even before, right? When we're talking about the civil rights movement, these are going to be things, there are folks that, you know, like our Bayard Rustins of the world, right? There are folks that fought for civil rights and also fought for LGBTQ rights, right? So I want to answer the question from a little bit of a different perspective. Now you know a little bit about the LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill. It's super, super important. Especially for New Jersey, we're the second state. So California was the first state to pass this. We're the second state, right? So this is not something that happens in all states in our country. But when you think about this question, right? So the question was, what do you think we can do to continue the education for queer history and its importance to the way it shaped America? So I can tell you, I'm 35 years old. I know. Right? Can you believe it, y'all? So I'm 35 years old. I have four kids. Okay. I have four kids, right? And I can tell you that until my four-year-old told me that they have a boy body, but they think they have a girl brain, I didn't know anything about gender identity, right? I knew nothing. So for me, I have committed myself to learning as much as I can about LGBTQIA identities. And the way that I feel like we're gonna talk about this history is to teach my cisgender kids, right? So my cisgender kids need to understand their sibling, right, number one. So I'm gonna do it in my family. I'm gonna educate the people that are close to me first, right? My mother-in-law, my friends, right? The people in my life who might not know about sexual orientation or gender identity. And then I'm gonna move out from there. And I'm gonna ask those folks to teach people in their life, right? So we have this LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill, so in the school system, this is gonna be an expectation, right? It's gonna be expected that educators are doing this. But the truth of the matter is, it's every parent in the room that loves their kid, or every parent in the room that's trying to understand what their child's going through, and advocating even when it's difficult, right? And talking about these issues even when it's uncomfortable or folks don't agree with you. That's how we keep the history going. Because let me tell you, I didn't know all the amazing people that fought for the rights of folks today. I didn't, right? I wasn't exposed to that in high school, right? I wasn't exposed to it. There was these conversations were not being had, okay? And I wanna make sure that the people in my life don't learn, especially my oldest is 10, my youngest is 5, and I can tell you that my 5-year-old has a very good grasp on gender identity now that they have a sibling who's experiencing the world the way they are. And I think that's really important because hopefully that child will go to school and say, no, you can be who you are, right, in kindergarten. And believe me, he tells everyone. So I think it's important that we're not doing it just in the school space, we need to educate folks in the community space as well. We don't want to miss that piece, so.
All right, thank you, Hola. Yeah, let's go with Carl, and then I'll go to you last.
Okay, along the lines of that.
How old are you again, just to remind everybody?
I'm 13 years old.
Work.
So I'm still in middle school, and I'm in seventh grade. I've been out since I was in fifth grade, and I've never had anybody to look up to until I came out and I was I had to do so much research. I had to go through like Wikipedia and Google, finding other gay people everywhere. But
well, as long as those sites.
I think that it's just people need to be more aware, and they need to be educated, because a lot of people at my school, like other students, that I tell them I'm gay, and they expect me to be like Yas Queen at everything they say, and that's
which is okay.
Which is fine.
But it's not the reality.
But that's not everybody's like that, and also people think that's the whole culture, and it's. It's part of it, but it's really not the
RuPaul's
whole
fault.
Thing.
Just kidding. has anyone, have you had backlash?
No, honestly, not personally. It's just some people just don't care enough to think about, like, the world around them. And especially, like, in Fairhaven, it's not, we're a very small town, pretty picturesque, so there's a,
I know, it's
people
great.
Don't really get exposed to a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's no African American people in my grade, everyone's Caucasian, and there's like one or two Asians, and I think that people just need to be exposed to it.
Right.
They need to understand it, and they need to, get that exposure so they can pass it on.
Well, just to bring it up, you are the exposure, which is fantastic.
Yes, I am.
And with that, has like any? Do you think of it that way, or are you just living your true self?
I think some people think of me as like an oddity, and sometimes like, well, because a lot of people in my town are very like similar, and not that I'm like. Completely different, and that's not bad at all, but I don't know how to explain it, just it's different from what other people have seen, and I think people need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask him a question?
Yeah. He'll put it on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do you think, and I'm fascinated by you saying that, you know, they have this expectation that if you came out, you're going to suddenly change and be this other.
Yeah.
Yes,
where do you think that comes from for them?
Well, I think just because people only see like people like RuPaul, and people assume that that's like the face of the community. And because people like RuPaul, they have such a big platform. Like, I don't know. But I think that people don't understand that all being gay comes down to is like sexuality and identifying like as yourself. And I think everyone's like sexuality is very personal. I'm nothing like RuPaul. Well, that's debatable. But like we're all very
I mean,
different.
All of us are a little bit like RuPaul.
Yeah.
But whatever.
But we're not all the same person.
No, of course not.
And I think people just need to see each other for who they actually are. Like, if I walk up to a straight person, and, like, I wouldn't treat them like any of my other friends. I would talk to them like themselves. Like,
you would just be like, hey, what's up? How are you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wouldn't be treating them any different than, like, other people. So.
Michelle, thank you.
You're my hero, Carl. You really are. And I say that because when I was 26 years old, I found Unitarian Universalism. And I found it because my partner and I were looking for an inclusive community for ourselves. And we looked on the internet, and this thing, Unitarian Universalists, came up. And it was this wonderful and inclusive place, and it was almost too good to be true. And so I sent an email to the minister at a local congregation in Pennsylvania, and I got this wonderful, warm email back, and I was still a little suspicious. And so I was like, I'm going to show up there. And so we went, and it was the most welcoming experience that I had ever had. And about a month later, I became their youth program director. And thinking, there's no way these people are going to hire me. I don't know anything about Unitarian Universalism. But I did know a lot about working with youth. And so that's sort of where my career began. But at 26 years old, at that time in my life, I wasn't out. And that was the beginning of me being open about myself and my sexuality. And so it took a really long time. And so Carl is from our congregation, and when I was talking about inviting you here, it was sort of an emotional experience for me because you're awesome. Like, I mean, that's an amazing thing to be able to do. And Unitarian Universalism, a lot of people, it's a small but mighty faith, and a lot of people haven't heard of it. Usually if people do, they're from the LGBTQI community. Because we have been a welcoming and inclusive faith for some time now, and it really is true. And we have a principle. We have seven principles, and our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And that truly does mean every single person. And we live out those values every day and in various different ways. And so when we talk about education and learning the history and such, how we do that is we find ways to educate our kids through our faith development programs and bring in the history and the people who have come before us and who have been the trailblazers and have helped us today be who we are and have the rights that we have and such. And Unitarian Universalists are typically known for their social justice and activism work. And so that's usually when people will sort of find out about us. And what I think is amazing about that is sometimes we go and we do this work and it's frustrating and it doesn't seem like change is happening very quickly, and we give it our all, and the road is very, very long, and it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And you have to look back at the people who came before us, and it's with that that you realize that change is possible. And lifting that up and continuing to do that work and to move forward. And also, we have also realized with this and also with our anti-racism work and such that often, sort of like Carl said, in our schools, especially around here, these things aren't being addressed. And often, kids aren't seeing people like themselves, and that's not being lifted up. And so we work very hard to be able to show our children and youth people who are like them and represent themselves. So,
go ahead.
So there was one time when Michelle was giving a service, and I remember she said she was very proud that she could park under the rainbow flag like every Sunday. And honestly, that's one of the main reasons, like, why I let myself, or I can be open about who I am. And honestly, Michelle, you inspired me, so.
Hold on. I get very emotional, especially with kids. All right.
It's like 20 minutes in.
Go ahead.
So
you can stay inside of the question and go every which way inside of that question.
Okay, yeah, so.
Doesn't matter.
Like, when I was sent these questions, like, this is the one that kind of, like, stumped me a little because it.
It's a good question.
It made me think. So for me, I, like, through everything that everyone has said, like, tonight so far, I think that, most importantly, that youth and adults should just really, like, maintain a focus on just learning. Because for me, when I was younger, I thought our gay neighbors were brothers. I had no idea that, like, what, like, gay was, basically. Even LGBT in general, I had no idea. And so I think it's just so important that, A, young kids learn, and B, like, older folks. The people who went to college in 1985 or whatever, like, the people who are long gone out of school, it's so important that they learn, because, like, I think the part of with the non-acceptance, it's because they don't know and they don't feel like learning. But
right.
Learning about this community is one Google search away. And it's so easy to just dive in and learn all the important figures that it's, like, interesting to learn about. And speaking, I don't remember who said it, but the community influencer, was that you? Like, influencing
wow.
inside your community?
I think I said making sure the community has a understanding.
I'm just going to keep talking. It is true, and it's so funny, because you say mention the Google thing, right? However, what I've been discovering with conversations in regards to all of this is that it's just not a matter of, we're like, oh, we're in 2018, but if you see the things that people can Google in regards to our current administration and the way people are showing up with the voice that they are using against so many communities, that's unfortunately gets what, that's what takes precedence, right? That's what takes the top. So just by you getting on microphone right now, all of you, every single one, all of you being here, that's the shift and the impact of how people are gonna actually understand and be educated with the work that everyone does. If someone comes up to you and they wanna ask you what does gay mean, or we have to also educate people on that, and how do we talk about that and not be afraid of that because of the way the media handles things recently in these past few years.
Yeah.
So, yes, Ashley.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think you said something that's really important. And from a parent perspective, like you said, parents need to, you know, have these conversations, or adults and youth. And what popped into my head when you said that was, I feel like sometimes parents don't share information with their children because they don't want them to turn out a certain way, right? Well, if I expose them to this, maybe that will influence them this way, right? And we know that you are who you are, right? So if you identify as an LGBTQ person, it's not that somebody influenced you to be that person, right? That's the person that you are. Same thing as being cisgender or straight, right? No one influenced you to be cisgender or straight. That's how you identify. I mean, what came to my mind is, my biggest fear as a parent is not that my children are going to turn out to be somebody that I don't want them to be. My fear is that my children aren't going to have enough information to be the person that they are. And I think if more adults and more parents understood that the more information you give your child or a young person to understand things maybe outside of their day-to-day life, right, or outside of what you understand, or you try your best to expose them to different people and culture and identities, you may give them the opportunity to have a conversation that they might have never had with you. So I think that's what came to my mind. Like, let's not have the fear of not talking about something. Let's really embrace having these conversations, because they could help you understand who you are at a way younger age. And it might not be just sexual orientation or gender identity. You know, it might be exposure to something that you're interested in, or something that makes you you, right?
Yeah, and so what I was gonna say along the lines of being an advocate in your own community is, like, today something happened to me that just completely warmed my heart. And my grandmother is 95 and grew up in Germany in the 1930s. So she is old as heck, and she loves me no matter what, but she, when I first came out to her as bisexual, she had no idea. She kept telling me, like, what happens if you want to have kids, like, all this stuff, and since she's old, every time I mentioned a girl, we'd have to have the same conversation again, because she'd forget. And today, she texted me that my mom told
95
her...
95 and texted you?
Yeah, she has this cute little Verizon phone. It's adorable. But she texted me and said that my mom told her I was doing a panel for gay rights, just that, and she said that she was proud of me. And the fact that, like, I've spoken enough with her on this, that she finally understands, it's like something so great. And like you said that this is a marathon, and you're completely right, because it's taken a lot. I had to, when I came out to my parents in like 2013, I had to be an advocate for myself. And what I wanted to talk about, how, I'm losing my train of thought. Hold on. How nuts. I really lost it. Sorry.
You'll get it back.
Yeah, but I really lost it. Yeah.
You came out 2013.
Okay, 2013. So, like, right. So, since my parents had gone to college a long time before, if there were resources now for adults that they could go to and learn, even if just for adults that have queer kids, that have kids in the LGBT community, that they could go to and learn for themselves, because my parents didn't accept me at first because they just didn't understand.
You've heard of PFLAG, right?
No, I don't PFLAG, even know what that is.
PFLAG, we have someone here representing PFLAG. Where is she? Hi, can you come up here for a second? And just remind me of your name again. Okay.
Hand that mic over
to Bonnie. Come all the way down front in the beginning. Just explain what PFLAG is.
So PFLAG is a support group for parents of LGBTQ people, and it was founded years ago in the 70s in Queens, New York. But we have two support group meetings. We have one that meets in Shrewsbury and one that meets in Toms River on a monthly basis, and it's parents that come together that want to understand about their child, and also the child can come as well and meet other kids and stuff there as well. So we do educational events. We speak, you know, we do trainings at companies and things like that so that people will understand how to treat LGBT people. So.
And just to bring up, to keep going with that, is that once again, by being here and doing what we're doing right now, is another, people will hear, oh, PFLAG, and if a kid is listening to this, they'll be like, what's PFLAG? Because they could be a 9-year-old and not know what PFLAG, you didn't know what PFLAG is. So that's the way to get the message out, to get to the source. So we've got to keep doing more of this. This is so important. Got to do it. But thank you. All right, I'm going to shift gears here. What programs have you created to bring, well, this is fine, because what programs have you created to bring in queer youth and their allies? Well, I created Queer Teen Podcast to bring in the queer youth and their allies, which is pretty cool. And I have to say, like, the conversations that I had with a lot of the kids that are here tonight and the kids that I've discovered through the community, one of the people specifically, her name's Rebecca, she's an 11-year-old trans activist, and she spoke to 31,000 people in Texas at one of their conferences for Lutheran is their faith. Yeah. And because she spoke, and she's the first trans person to ever come out in that community and speak as an 11-year-old at the time, or 10 or however old she was, kids came out of the closet and felt safe in that community, in Texas, I like to add. So that's the power of, you can find her on social media, she's fantastic, she'll be on one of the episodes, I think 7. And her mom and her family and her they live next to the church. Her dad's a pastor at the church. They have a gender neutral bathroom in Vernon, New Jersey, on the mountains overlooking the beautiful ski resorts and stuff. It's just like, it's a great setting, and Jamie's the mom. She's just, it's like so powerful, and it's just how do you follow her?
So,
you need a microphone.
You can follow Rebecca at The Real Rebecca, spelled R-E-B-E-K-A-H, The Real Rebecca, if you do want to follow her.
Yeah, she's also, she has about like 10,000 followers, so you'll find The Real Rebecca very easily. It's very easy. We have a whole like social media thing I'm going to do at the end, too. So just so you know, get your phones out then. Programs. What's your program, Kate?
So I'm going to give you a little, for some of you guys I know, you've been with me for the ride. It's so cool. I love waving at all of you. I started, I started Make It Better for Youth with a friend of mine who is a mom, who's a PFLAG mom, became a PFLAG mom, or was a PFLAG mom at the time, because, you know, there was some terrible stuff, as there is always terrible things going on, but there was a crazy swath of suicides, and I was beside myself. It was such young people, and it was the first time the media had really covered it, which was the difference. And there were so many in a short period of time. I lost it. I freaked. I was difficult to be around because it was the only thing I could think of. And I started Make It Better because there had to be a way that the community could open up conversation among allies that didn't know each other were allies. So it wasn't just me talking with other teachers anymore. It was like, you know, we also got to be talking with some other, you know, people who are out or thinking about being out, like our out council persons. We needed to be able to talk with people who ran libraries, with people who were maybe artists living in the community, and start to make some connections. And initially, we began by having kind of a social event be the core of it, which we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary for Gala, which is the LGBTQ inclusive.
Gay prom, I'm going.
It is super fun.
But you should all go.
But I didn't know that that would be an important piece of programming, like, intuitively.
Yeah.
But it ended up being really interesting because we had kids coming from 20, in the largest year, we had 29 different districts throughout the state, so not even just the county, coming from Hunterdon County, Somerset County, Essex County, Hudson County, all the way on down through Southern Ocean County, y'all.
I don't know what that means, but whoa.
It was a big deal. And it was kids in sort of, you know, regular public schools, but also homeschool situations, also residential school situations, and, you know, trying to find a community. Let me tell you, you want to go to a school dance, right? You're going to be with, like, a lot of kids. Unless there's only, like, four of you. Try to have a school dance when there's four of you. Let's just talk about that for a second. Like, oh, that's dancing for myself, right? We couldn't do that. So it was like, this is great. We're gonna get 200 people in a room and a real DJ over there, my partner, a real DJ.
Oh, hey,
I was like, you're gonna have a real event. You are in the spotlight. And we felt that that gave us the energy to keep doing other small programming through the year. And now we're doing the two other things, the one, the inclusive curriculum. And to your point earlier about adults and young people being together, mm-hmm. we also do an intergenerational potluck. So queer older folks, queer young folks, and just kind of having that conversation because there's a lot of silence. There's been a lot of silence through the years. So those are things that we do that we feel are, like, really important and help bridge gaps.
Can you talk about OWL?
I can.
Thank you.
I was going to.
I know you are. I saw the... Huh?
The wheels were turning.
I got you.
So we have Unitarian Universalism, and we've actually partnered with the United Church of Christ, have written a curriculum card called OWL, stands for Our Whole Lives, and it's a sexuality education program, and we start it in kindergarten and first grade, and then we have a fourth, fifth, seventh through ninth, it depends on what your congregation does it. We do it in eighth and ninth. And then there's a high school and a young adult and an adult version. And so it's about, learning about sexuality as you grow and learning about your body and your body being your own and how special it is when young children start learning about freezing up. Let me think. Hold on.
Maya, you can help out.
Ooh, yes. Yes, yes.
You can help out with this one. You teach it. Come up to the mic.
Yeah, come up to the microphone.
I just tell people what to do, apparently.
Yeah.
Get up here! I don't know.
It's we're very proud of the
come
program.
Come right here. Oh, actually,
Maya's
go to that mic and sit on that side.
A teacher for the eighth and ninth grade group.
Yeah, so we teach about sexuality starting from infancy, you know, the touch and feel of skin and how that's okay and comfortable. And we go all the way up through old age and adulthood. Everybody is a sexual being. Everybody has the right to be a sexual being. We talk about identity. We talk about communication. Communication with siblings, with your family, with your partners.
And why is that?
Amazing.
Why is it? Why do you? Amazing. Just explain why. I know why it's important, but just explain to the listeners why it's important to really teach on sexuality, what that means for you. Like, what can that prevent someone from probably doing, or like not having a clue what to do?
It teaches not only healthy sexual decision making, but just healthy lifestyle decision making, how to talk to everyone around you and how to feel safe around adults. We talk about consent. If you guys watched Consent is Like Tea, don't force anyone to drink tea. So we go through those things with our seventh and eighth graders. They're laughing at me back there. So that they can make responsible decisions and don't make mistakes that later they're going to come to regret.
Thank you.
Good Rowan today.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm going to talk about a little.
I just want to say the eighth and ninth grade program is a full year program. And it gets real. It gets real, real. And I mean,
that's the age. So you're like,
it is. Woo! It is. I mean, nothing is left out. And it's not a. It's not an abstinence-only program. It's really about making healthy, informed decisions. And our youth always say that they're often the most informed people in the room, and that their friends are coming to them for advice and sort of the accurate information and such. And sometimes it can get a little uncomfortable in the room. But by the time people go to college and they come back, I've actually had youth come and say that the OWL curriculum has saved their lives, and so I'm like the biggest advocate for that curriculum. It's pretty amazing. And like I said, the United Church of Christ helped write that. Just the only difference is they use a companion for it that's like a Christian companion.
You've been quiet for a while. Let's talk about a GSA and let's talk about this instead. You made my mind turn. Being out, you all are out. A lot of the people in this room are out. And if you're not, that's okay too. With inside of sexuality and really discovering that for yourself, becoming out of the closet and not having a lot of, options, really. What has that been experience for you? Because there's social media ways to do it, and there's things for youth, but really, when you're going through the puberty, I'm just going to be real, when you're going through puberty, when you're going through all that, and you come out, and you're like, oh, I'm going to be my true self, where does that actually line up inside of all that?
Yeah, so I was in middle school, I looked like a warlock, and I basically just walked through the halls with a hunchback. I looked like a gremlin. I didn't want anyone to talk to me. And I feel like...
Middle school?
Yeah. Well, now too, but mostly middle school. I feel like everyone in middle school feels so awkward and uncomfortable. But we've seen, especially in our GSA at our high school organization...
I'm looking at my kids now.
Oh, sorry if I just like exposed you.
No, we're all awkward and uncomfortable. Okay. I love it. It's fantastic. It's adorable.
At our GSA, at our high school, we had, 15-plus middle schoolers this year join, which is, like, really weird. We were like, wow, where are you coming from? And they're all, honestly, very, very open and very comfortable with who they are, which is weird for me, because I grew up in a generation, I'm saying I grew up like an 87-year-old man. I grew up in...
But it's a different... I mean, the difference between someone who's 8 to 12 years old to the difference between... It's a huge difference.
Yeah. So, like, me and my iPod Shuffle, like, had a hard time, like, relating to kids that were coming in and were like, oh, I know what a 401k is, and I have an Instagram.
It's true, though.
Yeah, it was difficult.
I got an iPhone 10.
But they're actually... I found to be so informed.
Yeah.
Like, even more informed than I am, I was shocked. I'm stupid. I didn't mean it like that. But they're really, really, really interested in gay history or topics that lead into the LGBT organization. And I find that, like, we can actually look to these kids to kind of be extremely helpful. Because I know our political future right now is very nefarious and kind of dark.
That question's coming up.
There you go. Psychic. We can kind of look to them and be like, oh, wow, this is a whole organization of kids. This is a whole group of kids that are now growing up totally informed and kind of have the tools to be ready to take on this world that we never had. So it's kind of going to be a fun, I don't want to say experiment, but it's going to be a fun thing to watch, have this whole new generation grow up and become the leaders of tomorrow that are totally open and okay with who they are.
Yeah, someone told me this. They were like, between the ages of 8 and like 13 is the generation that is actually going to have the most impact, because for some reason they're the ones that are actually doing what they're doing and getting up in front of people and speaking. Someone like Rebecca, like, she's 12 years old and she came out at 8 as trans, and like, she had support, of course, but like, they really are being like, oh no, this is not how it works. You cannot talk that way. If you're gonna talk that way, I'm gonna explain to you why you can't talk that way. But they're doing it in a very mature fashion, which is really great to see and hear and understand and like learn from them, because we don't know what that's like. What is why I also started QT, because I was like, I know kids, but I need to actually get inside of what you all are doing.
I think that's the important part, is the dialogue between children and adults.
Yes.
Which is, with these amazing organizations, kind of being, for the first time, opened and honest with who they are and what they are and what they believe and what should happen and what shouldn't happen. And that dialogue between a kid and their parent is extremely important, especially when it comes to sexuality, because growing up, you kind of look to your parents for everything. They're your role models, they're who you wanna be, they're who you cry to, they're who you love, they're who you hug. And for them to look at you and be like, hey, actually, I don't really care who you are or not accept you for who you are, is devastating. So to have this dialogue in organizations that parents can run to when they're like, I don't know what the heck is going on, is amazing and probably gonna change the world.
Right here.
Well, coming out, I never actually like posted on Instagram, hey, I'm gay. I kind of just meet new people. And then if they ask me, I'll be like, where'd you get that from?
Yeah, right. So these are the conversations. They're happening. People are talking. We're getting into the good stuff now. This is just part one of my season one finale of Queer Teen Podcast. It's been very exciting, and I'm glad you're listening. So stay tuned for part two next week as we explore pop culture, our current administration, and different organizations to just get information so everybody can do it and move forward together. And I want to make a correction. It's the Algonquin Arts Theater of Manasquan, New Jersey. And I want to thank the United Methodist Church of Red Bank, New Jersey, for letting us record our last episode of the first season of QT, Queer Teen Podcast, showcasing and encouraging the next generation of queer youth from across the world to stand up for what's right. And remember, listen, learn, love.